It's not like any other podcast. Coming to you straight from the heartland, where investing is told like it is. It's time for Darren Garman's Paranoid Banker Podcast. Hold on, because here comes the next episode of the Paranoid Banker Podcast.
Hey there, Darren Garman here, and welcome to this week's podcast. I'm excited to cover properties that you need to avoid. But before I do that, I want to remind you, we're having our next Investor Property Discovery Day on June 7th. That's a Friday, okay? Discovery Day is where we take you behind the scenes. I mean, pretty much pull the curtain back, show you the kind of properties we own, what our process is. You get to talk and meet some of the staff and really get an idea of really what all the fuss is about and why hundreds and hundreds of investors are involved with us here in the heartland and having apartment property ownership in these properties. And not only will you get to look at properties that we own, but there's also properties that we're looking at purchasing and acquiring as well. And you'll get a behind the scenes as to all of our processes, our methodologies, the method to our madness, so to speak. You'll get a really good idea about that. And so if you're serious about really going to the next level with your net worth, with your income, with where you really want to be, you should be at the Discovery Day. It is limited to only 14 people. That's it. Okay, so if you're interested, just simply send me an email. Let me know. We will keep you posted, send you an itinerary, and then make sure that you have an opportunity to be involved with us here in the Heartland with our Property Discovery Day. All right, so having said that, let's jump into properties you need to avoid. I want to talk about these because it's been quite the topic recently. I sent a couple emails out. I've had a lot of people responding to these emails, asking questions about these. And so I thought it would be a good idea to cover this with you right now. And so let's go ahead and talk about the first one. And that is office buildings. So I got an email today with an offering on a 60,000 square foot office building. I just deleted it. You should too. Office buildings are akin to the dinosaur. They're slowly becoming irrelevant. I'm not going to say they'll be totally extinct. They won't. But in terms of what they were like as investments in the 70s, 80s, and even early to mid 90s, it's nowhere close. And the main reason is because of technology, right? Technology has allowed us to really be in a position where we can work, I don't want to say from almost anywhere. But remember, 70s, 80s, and early 90s is pre-internet days, right? Pre-network days, pre-everything almost. Back then you had a fax machine. You had word processing. you had some things. But really, it's technology is what's driving most of it. And you don't want to own a property that you're going to have large issues and money losing issues in selling years down the road. Because really, always remember, the biggest cash flow you get is when you sell. And to have a property that is always going to be questionable, and you're always wondering and worrying about whether you're going to even make a little bit of money on, that'd be office buildings. Okay, I have a couple of exceptions to this. Number one is if you're an owner user. So, I mean, you're going to move your dental practice in a building. You're going to move your business in a building. Well, fine. I think you're good there. Perfect. Okay. And heck, you can even maybe rent some of the rest of it out and have a little bit of income coming in if you want to. That's fine. Or you find a building to buy that's leased by a Fortune 100 company for a long, long period of time. I'm talking 10, 15, 20 years. Other than that, you want to run, because it's not only technology. Think about this. When an office space becomes vacant, do you think it gets filled right away? Compared to the average apartment, it takes 5 to 8 months longer to fill a vacant office space. So, you know, the space comes empty and it takes 6 months to fill it. Oh, and by the way, when you do fill it, you'll probably have to give the tenant some allowance to help build out and finish it out the way that they want, which is money out of your pocket. Or you can build it out and finish it out for them if you want. That's cool. That's money out of your pocket. And of course, you can attempt to recapture that money spent in the lease payments you're going to get. But at the end of the day, all you're really doing is moving money around, right? I mean, if it costs $50,000 to refinish the space and you're going to put $50,000 into the lease with maybe some interest, are you really gaining much here? Especially when the tenant will probably do what after 2 years, 3 years, 5 years? That's right, leave. Then you're stuck doing it all over again. Avoid it. Get your running shoes on, lace them up, and run away from these things as fast as you can. Don't own them. All right, that's number one. Number two, it might surprise you, number two, it's apartment properties. That's right. And I'm even talking about apartment properties built as garden-style apartment properties. You want to avoid these if they're in small communities. Why? No economic activity. Why? Not a large population to draw from to rent the units. There's nobody living there. How are you going to rent your apartments when there's nobody living there? Right? So think about this. I'll tell you a story. I had a guy that bought 15 apartment units, client of mine, and he wants to go to lunch and he wants to talk about some things. And one of the things he talks about for like an hour was how great this apartment property was doing. Small town. He's telling me he's getting like a 30-some% return. Things are just going awesome. Cash in like crazy, cash cow, the whole deal, right? Well, less than a year later, he's calling me on the phone, asking me if I can help him sell the property. So, of course, my question, I thought, probably, you know, is he getting a divorce or is there like a problem? I mean, what's going on here? Why would you sell this, right? No, it wasn't a life kind of event. It was a property issue. He now had 13 out of 15 units empty. And by the way, they had been empty, all of them now, going on 7 months. Why? Well, when he talked to me before about just how great this property was doing, he failed to mention to me that all of the tenants, with the exception of two, were workers there building the ethanol plant. Okay? Well, once the ethanol plant was done, guess where the workers went? That's right. Away. And do you think he could find a good, not great, a good tenant in this small town? No. Matter of fact, what ended up happening, which is kind of a sad story, property ended up going back to the bank. I couldn't sell it. There's no way I wanted to buy it. I couldn't sell it for him. I tried, not successful. And I'm pretty damn good at this. And so ended up going back to the bank. So look, stay away from apartment properties in small towns. If the town is not within 30 minutes of a major city, and here's my definition of major, by the way, because depending on where you're located, this could mean different things. If it's not within a half hour of somewhere that has a Starbucks, okay? I'm just going to put it to you that way. If it's not a half hour from somewhere that has a Starbucks, you don't want to own it. And this is not me saying I think Starbucks is great, but it is an indication of what's needed in a city or town. Because Starbucks isn't going anywhere where there's not enough people to buy their coffee. Well, it's the same kind of thing for apartments we want to buy. okay? So if there's not a Starbucks within a half hour, don't you even think about buying a property there, especially an apartment building, okay? All right, so that's number two. Number three related to that, kind of, is another apartment property you need to avoid. Yep, that's right, another apartment property. And you're probably surprised, geez, Jaron, you're like Mr. Apartment Property, and you're like, pick, no. I'm just telling you the ones to avoid. And the second one to avoid is the property that used to be a, you know, house, like a three-story, two-story Victorian, but it's been converted into 12 sleeping rooms. No. Run away. Again, lace up the shoes. Make sure the laces are tight. And, I mean, don't pull a hamstring when you take off, and run away. Okay, you don't want to own those. Now, here's the thing on those. Those kind of properties on paper look absolutely fabulous. You almost think to yourself, how can anybody go wrong with this? Look at the numbers. Here's the problem. The numbers never come close to what they are on paper. There's so many issues you'll have in repairs, with maintenance, with housing, with upkeep, with keeping the property up to where it needs to be because of its age. It's not worth it. And remember, it's resale again here, okay? How many investors do you think are out there right now wanting to buy a converted house? Versus how many are out there right now wanting to buy an apartment building built as an apartment building? I mean, it kind of speaks for itself, right? So avoid those. And in addition to those, I'm also including the properties that were once a office building, once a warehouse, once a storage facility that was converted into apartments. No, it's the same deal. Okay, you'll still have tons of money going out of the checking account, paying for repairs, maintenance, upkeep. I mean, if the property wasn't conceived as an apartment property, if the architects didn't sit down and develop the floor plans and everything as an apartment property, you don't want to own it. Think about it. It's almost like having a square peg, you know, pounding the old square peg in a round hole. I mean, eventually, with enough hammering and enough effort, energy, you can get the peg in there, you know, break doing whatever, break it. I don't care. It'll finally go in there. Well, that's kind of what this is. Right? That's kind of what this is. You don't want to do it. So make sure you avoid those. And then let me talk to you about really the last one I'll cover, at least on this podcast. And it's commercial industrial property. Okay? If you do not have the experience. And I know, yeah, I know, you got to get your experience somehow, sometime, and you got to start somewhere. I get it. But if you're just getting into the, or even if you've been in the investment real estate game a while, unless you've got a really good connection, mentor, coach, someone you can really draw from that has a lot of experience as an industrial, commercial industrial property owner, you don't want to own those either. Let me give you a quick example of what I mean. So over the years, we have owned, our partnerships have owned commercial industrial property, big warehouses. Okay, so the last one that we recently sold here about a year ago was 75,000 square feet. Okay, leased to one company. And by the way, it was a national company, a name that you would know in athletic wear. You'd know the name if I told you who it was. So they leased this 75,000 square foot warehouse from us for actually a number of years, and it was really a good investment for us. But they left. Labor contracts, changes in their company philosophy, they decided to leave. Their lease was coming up for renewal, and they usually renewed, but this time they weren't going to renew. So let me ask you a question. What do you do now when you have a vacant, empty, 75,000 square foot warehouse industrial building? Who do you lease it to? What are the odds of you finding a tenant within 30 days, 60 days, 180 days, 365 days, or longer? I'm going to tell you they're not that good. Okay? Oh yeah, you can always look at splitting the property, splitting it off and renting out chunks. You can do that, but at what cost? Not only that, the carrying costs of an empty building of that size are substantial. Keep in mind, when the building's empty, you still have to pay property taxes, insurance, utilities. You still have to do that with no income coming in. You can literally have a building like that and own it for 5 years with it being completely full. And all of the income and cash flow you've made in that 5 years is gone in the next year if it's vacant, the next year, year and a half. Okay? We were fortunate when we sold our last one that we didn't have it, we only had it vacant 3 months, and a company next door ended up buying it. They had a company location next door and ended up buying it. So we were fine. And we would have been fine for quite a while, actually. But from a financial standpoint, if we would have had to hold that thing for 6 months, 12 months, 18 months without a tenant, and then have to put more money and improvements in it, we would have saw 6 to 8 years of cash flow go out the door. And that is not the situation you want to get yourself in. Okay? So those are the properties I wanted to, at least in a nutshell on this podcast, tell you needed to avoid. But I got to tell you the two you need to get involved in, like yesterday. And the first one is not going to be that one that you think I would mention, because I know you're all thinking I'm going to say apartments. And my first one is not going to be apartments. I'm going to tell you a story that is going to tell you what my first one's going to be. And here goes. So a couple times a year, I will go through most of our apartment properties and do inspections. I like to do the old trust but verify thing. So I'll walk through the units, check things out, make sure things are operating and running like my staff is telling me. And let me tell you what I've noticed when I do that. So 10 years ago, what you'd see in a typical apartment unit, rental unit from a resident would be furniture, appliances, and electronics, and maybe a couple personal items, right? I mean, that's basically what you'd see. You know, TV, stove, refrigerator, kitchen table, chairs, some living room furniture, maybe a little desk in a place with maybe a computer on it, you know, maybe some things like that, right? Here's what you see a hell of a lot more of today that you never saw back then. Not only is there those items that I just mentioned, but now you've got garden tools, a whole bunch of boxes full of stuff, clothes mainly, toys, books, magazines. I've even been in apartments where they've stored equipment like weed whackers, hedge trimmers. I mean, those kinds of things. They got them in their apartments. In other words, more and more people are trying to keep and store more stuff. And, you know, some of these folks are trying to turn their living units into storage garages, is really what they're trying to do. And you get my point already. You want to be looking for storage facilities, storage garages, because more and more people will want a place to put their shit, pretty much, okay? And, I mean, look around your home right now. Do a little mental trip through your house or your condo or your apartment right now. How much stuff do you have stacked up, sitting around in places where you know it needs to go somewhere? Most of you know you got to get a garage. You got to put stuff somewhere. It's not to a point where you're going to throw it away, not to a point where you're going to sell it, but it's to a point where you got to get it out. This will be the norm more and more will be the case for storage facilities. So the number one thing I'd be looking for would be storage garages and storage facilities. That's number one. Number two, of course, are apartments. And I'm not going to go over all of the reasons why. I've talked ad nauseum now over the last year, year and a half. And you're seeing what I'm talking about happening in terms of demand, right? From tenants. The line keeps getting longer out the door of prospective residents wanting to, preferring to, needing to rent apartments. It will become more and more the case as the next 5 to 7 years go by. In addition to that, there are more and more investors wanting to own apartments themselves. So what do you think that demand does from investors wanting to own apartments? That's right, it drives the price up, doesn't it? Drives up the value. Supply and demand, as old as, I don't know, I mean, it goes way, way back. So why you would not want to be in a couple of areas that has this going, I mean, it's kind of a mystery to me, but these are the two places, and I'm not saying the only two, but I'm saying the two you want to really be looking at and really be involved in. Okay, so I hope you've enjoyed this podcast where I've covered not only the projects I told you to lace up your shoes, tighten up those shoestrings, and run away from without, of course, pulling a hamstring or something, but also a couple to get involved in. All right, and then as a final reminder, our Investor Property Discovery Day, which is limited to just 14 people, will be happening on June 7th. That's a Friday. Do what you can to be here. You will want to see what we do, how we do it, and being involved with us, and why hundreds and hundreds of investors are involved with us from all over the U.S. You're going to want to check this out. All right. So have a great day. Have a great week or weekend whenever you're listening to me. And we will talk to you later. All right. We'll see you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining Darren Garman's Paranoid Banker Podcast. For investment questions, comments, or to get in touch with Darren, go to www.garmanblog.com. Thanks for joining Darren Garman's Paranoid Banker Podcast. For investment questions, comments, or to get in touch with Darren, go to www.garmanblog.com.